Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 6, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. till 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is the Gospel according to John. We're in chapter 12, and it is being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 13.
I'm sorry, 13.
Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and to God, he riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit. And ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. I speak not of you all. I know whom I have chosen. But that the scripture may be fulfilled, He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. Now I tell you before it come, that when it is come to pass, ye may believe that I am he. Verily, verily, I say unto you, He that receiveth whomsoever I send, receiveth me, and he that receiveth me, receiveth him that sent me. When Jesus had thus said, he was troubled in spirit, and testified, and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. Then the disciples looked one on another, doubting of whom he spake. Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples, whom Jesus loved. Simon Peter therefore beckoned to him, that he should ask who it should be of whom he spake. He then, lying on Jesus' breast, saith unto him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, He it is to whom I shall give a sop when I have dipped it. And when he had dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. And after the sop, Satan entered into him. Then said Jesus unto him, That thou doest, do quickly. Now no man at the table knew for what intent he spake this unto him. For some of them thought, because Judas had the bag, that Jesus had said unto him, Buy those things that we have need of against the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. He then, having received the sop, went immediately out, and it was night. Therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go, ye cannot come. So now I say to you, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one to another. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? Jesus answered him, Whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. Peter said unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake. Jesus answered him, Wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice.
Okay. All right. Let's see if we have anything. Yeah, I'd like to make an announcement myself. We're in need of some district leaders. We need as many as we can get. We have 10 districts. I'd like to get at least 2 district leaders per district. At this point, we have, I believe, 10. And actually, we have one person, I think, that's just filling a spot until we get a person to replace that person. So we need 10 or more people, and we can even use 3 per district. Each district covers a particular state. So let me give you an example. If we look into the district leader on the directory, you can see we've broken up the nation into 10 parts, and we need 10 district leaders. And again, we need 2 in each district, and in some places more than that, of course. Because we really have to work diligently to start building committees of safety. We do have committees of safety moving through a process, and we need to encourage them and to encourage new ones to begin, to encourage the ones that kind of are getting ready to start but haven't started yet, to help them to encourage, be encouraged to actually get started and make their first meeting. Which will be an introduction to the Committee of Safety and to National Liberty Alliance, to the work that we're doing here to save this nation. There is no other way to save this nation. The only way is government by consent. The people need to get up on the grassroots level. They need to take control of their government from the grassroots. I believe it was Jefferson said, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And right now, I know in my county we have 249 committeemen. And that's what it takes to take care of the whole county. All of those individuals are pretty much slaves. They don't even know it. They walk papers for either the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. But we need to take it back and get rid of the political politicking and stop the debate and arguments on things that are fruitless and has nothing to do with the job of these people that we're electing. They have a job. It's defined very clearly in the Constitution on the federal level, same thing on the state level. The definition of their authorities and jurisdiction is well defined. They've been doing everything but staying within those guidelines. So it's up to the people to bring them back in. So generally speaking, if we can get about an average of 200 people, because I live in a pretty big county, so we're a highly populated county, should I say. The size of the county is one thing. It's the population of the county that's an important factor. So I would think if we can get a couple of hundred people in every county across America on the average, and maybe even less than that, but I do believe it will grow quickly. We're getting reports from people who are doing committees of safety, their first time, maybe they get 30 or so people. Second meeting, they got 60 or 70 people. And this has been the kind of reporting we're getting. It grows quickly, and of course the idea is put out to those who come, you know, come back next month, bring a friend. And we're going to start posting some videos of some committees of safety that have started, and show how they introduced it, and also and their first meeting. And so we'll do two meetings for each committee of safety that would like to, that's going to videotape their business and would like us to post it on the website for examples for other people, ideas for other people, and how things will do it. And people will do it their own way. We offer a lot of tools for that. We've got PowerPoints and bullet points, and we have some of them where they're actual PowerPoint videos where you can play the videos and discuss things after each video, or you could just take the PowerPoint, do it yourself, and so on. But the introduction is an important thing to follow a certain bullet point layout and cover the bases of what the Committee of Safety is and what their job is. So we need to take this nation back, and we know that devolution is in play. We know things are ready to happen soon, and there's going to be a big power void because the political process, we the people have to control. Right now, the enemy is controlling it. To be blunt, it's the Bar Association behind the political parties. They've statutorized the whole process of these political parties. They've created rules. They've put in party bosses. They set the stage and the statutes, and everybody thinks, well, this is the only way you can do it. You got to go through a statutory process that the government has put forth. Well, this government does not belong to the individuals who are elected in our government. This government belongs to the people, we the people. The other side of that coin, again, you get back to the Bar Association. They have destroyed our republic. They have destroyed our courts. They brought in civil law. They have abrogated common law. And it goes on and on and on and on with these people. And so they've taken over our courts. They don't acknowledge the Constitution. They do not acknowledge your unalienable rights. They make a mockery of it, as if you use that word, unalienable. They like to use the word civil rights. And I suppose to some degree, if this evil wasn't there, we can call them that. And maybe that will define our rights to some degree. But it is important to understand that those rights come from God and that they are unalienable or unalienable. And so when the void takes place in our government through lots of arrests, and I do believe it will be in the hundreds of thousands, because it is a huge, huge conspiracy. It is unbelievable, and hard to even comprehend in its size. They have captured every legislative state, at least to some degree, some totally, and some to just at least a degree. They've captured most, if not all, of the government or governor offices, and have put a little bit of a control on them, even though some of them might have good intentions in trying to do the right thing. They have problems dealing with these people. They've totally taken over our legislators in our federal level. They control our courts on the federal, state, and county and town level. And this is all the bar are the minions of the New World Order. They are the ones behind steering the legislation, steering the political parties and processes, steering the court systems and the court processes and the grand juries, controlling them, stacking them, and just bringing in, the civil law into our courts. And so we the people need to take it back. And like I said, if you pull, look, at you pull 20, 30 people, before you know you'll have 100. And as word gets out and to the committee men of that county, believe me, they'll start coming over here. I was a committee man quite a few times. We used to teach it. We've got a lot of elected individuals here, quote unquote elected, but that's not the real process. We didn't know that at the time. We went through that process, but we did get these people elected, and I'm telling you, the committee men, they get frustrated very quickly when they see the truth compared to what they're doing. Then they'll start to see the lie and the deception a little more stronger. As time goes along, they will see the lie and they will see the deception. because eventually they become frustrated and realize it's just a sham, and they're being suckered to walk for all these criminals to get them onto our onto the ballots. So we the people need to do it. If we fail to do it, then we'll fail America. We will fail our republic. We will lose our liberty. Our children will lose their heritage. And it'll be our fault. We need to do it. It only takes a couple hours a month. A meeting once a month, maybe 2 hours, roughly speaking, plus whatever traveling time. The meeting should be located in a convenient area in the county that everyone can have access to relatively quickly. You know, you don't want to put it all the way on the end of one county where someone on the other side of the county has to travel that far. You want to kind of get it in the center somewhere of the populace, the populations. But in any event, you know, we need to get these things going. And anybody who hasn't started to participate in this, they need to do it. They need to get out there and get active. We need district leaders. And again, the job of the district leaders is many. We had a meeting tonight. It was recorded. We'll be posting that up soon. if anybody's interested in becoming a district leader, get a hold of Jan. Just drop them a line, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. Let them know you're interested. He'll get you onto the list and send you an email on the next meeting. There will be a meeting this week, a general meeting with them. They will have a meeting in order to brainstorm a lot of ideas we spoke about tonight. Next Monday, we will solidify all those ideas and things and put them together in a written form, post it online, so that everybody understands and knows what it is that we have to do as a district leader and what knowledge we need to have. We're all learning. Nobody's expected to know anything. We'll fumble along. The school of hard knocks is the best school to go to. I know everything I know about law and everything I know about all the things that I speak about here in National Liberty Alliance. I went to the school of hard knocks. I had no formal education in any of these things. You know, you hit and you miss, and you get up and you fix things. You find out you have error. You correct the error. You keep building and constructing your knowledge, and eventually it all comes together. You start to get these epiphanies here and epiphany there when all of these things come together in your mind, and it just all of a sudden it just falls out into an epiphany, and you say, wow, now I understand that. And so district leaders do not have to be highly educated at all. They don't have to have any specific requirements, prerequisites per se for the startup, but it is required to start gaining knowledge. But we do want all of our district leaders to take all of our courses, and you could be working as you're taking the courses, working with other district leaders. But we'll do a bullet point thing on how to deal and talk with the individuals that are starting committees of safety on the grassroots level. You need to just build up knowledge. One of the key knowledges, other than going through these courses, which is really all about common law and law, which is our heritage. I mean, the law is our heritage, ultimately. The law gives us our liberty, ultimately. We do have to understand the process of building a committee of safety. We do have a booklet. Excuse me. We have a booklet up here underneath the Start a Committee of Safety. You come back to Handbooks and Tools, which has a tremendous amount of information on this page, and there's a lot of information on videos and PowerPoints and things for meetings, suggestions of things to do on the meetings and so on. But an important book is the Organizing Handbook right here, which is 71 pages. And this is what people need to, you know, really master to some degree. Wow. But, going through here, making some basic notes, there is a table of contents anyway, it'll help you. But going through here, it's pretty logical. Logic is easy. You know, when things are logical and apparently, obviously logical and truthful, it's easy to remember. And again, the more time you spend with things, the more it sinks in. People didn't have to sit and think on how they have to speak when they were babies. They just started talking one day because they've been listening. And after a while, they get it. They have an epiphany. Wow, that's what that word means. That's what that sound means. And they start responding back, you know. And that's the way the mind works. We don't have to struggle with it. So spending time will do it. Education is important. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. You can't have liberty. You can't have your heritage. You're not going to have your Bill of Rights. You will not be protected in the court. You will not be able to protect yourself in the court or represent your own case. You won't be able to do those things. But we're teaching you all that stuff. As a matter of fact, my book is coming out. I should be finishing it tomorrow. I've got very, very little to do. Sort of crossing T's and dotting I's and writing a few more paragraphs here or there, and that's it. Then it's a matter of spending a day checking out my format, and then I'm going to go up for publishing. I'm going to do self-publishing on this one, so it should happen quite quickly. I think I did self-publish a small book. It was the Grand Jury Handbook. I did publish that a while ago, and it was pretty simple on Amazon. And it's been making sales. It's been a little popular. It's only $5 a piece. You can get it for free here at National Liberty Alliance by downloading the PDF copy. But if you wanted a handbook, you know, something small, it's a handbook, you know, it's for $5 is what I'm selling it for. It's a little expensive. You know, if I could buy it by 10,000 at a time, I could sell it a lot cheaper. But being one at a time, it is what it is. But anyway, that's one of the things, you know, again, we need to put together is we need district leaders. And when you as a district leader, when you're trying to assist someone and they have a question and you don't know the answer to that question when they ask, it's okay because you're learning too. And you can say, hey, look, I'm learning too. Just be honest. I'm not sure of the answer on that one. I'll get back to you. And then you go up the line to get the answer. And eventually, if you have to, you come to me. Or you come to Monday night and ask the question here, and we'll give the answer, which is the best place to ask. Because it's really the best way that my time could be spent, where I can be spending my time doing other things, but spend the time here, and lots of people can hear the problem or the question or the situation and get the answer. So this is the best place to do it. This is the best format, the best venue. Okay, let me see what else. So anyway, get a hold of Jan if you're interested. There will be a meeting called, and you'll get an email this week for brainstorming. And we will be meeting next Monday at 7:30 right here in this room to finish off discussing and putting together the duties of the leadership, the national leadership or the district leaders. And it will go to work. And you don't have to spend a lot of time. If you put an hour a month or 2 hours a month, or if you could put more, that'd be fine. But just put a couple hours a month or an hour a month into it, talking to the individuals that are building committees of safety and just getting them information that they need, assisting them in any way, shape, or form. The leaders, or shall I say the district leaders, they are the Committee of Correspondence for National Liberty Alliance. Although National Liberty Alliance does not involve themselves in the grassroots level or whatever they do, it's all their business. It's not our business. Our business is only to teach them how to do what they need to do, to inform them, to educate them, to give them that knowledge, to be there as an advisor, to answer questions, and connect them committee to committee, from county to county, committee to committee, state to state, on a national level. We're going to create a page where we will list out some national problems that need really working together, and that's where the duty and the work of the committee is a committee of correspondence is involved with. They'd be looking at that page, bringing that information back to the general committee, which is the whole committee for the Committee of Safety, and to let them know, hey, look, you know, there is a national problem, and this is what it's about. And they may know of some national problems. They'll bring it up and get it to our leadership, and we'll post that information and get that knowledge out so we're all working on the same problems. I mean, I got a whole list of national problems that we need to deal with, and I'm sure everybody else does too. We do have to realize that a lot of the national problems will fall apart. Agenda 21, we don't have to worry about that. Agenda 21 is going to fail the day that devolution comes to an end. It'll be gone. There's a lot of things that'll be gone, so we shouldn't spin our wheels on a lot of these things. We don't have to spend much time worried about the problems with the voting, all of the cheating going on and trying to get into the courts. There's a well-established plan. It's being played out, and everything is happening according to plan, exactly the way they planned it to happen. And at the end of the day, they'll all be arrested, jailed, and those who are guilty of treason will end up on the end of a short rope. But that's up to the juries to decide all those things. A free and independent jury. So we need to all get involved. If we're not involved, we're not doing our duty as one of the people. You know, I'd like to use the word citizen. I don't have a problem with the word citizen. Our founding fathers didn't have a problem with the word citizen. They used it, I believe, 7 or 8 times in the Constitution. A word that they never used was democracy. The only place that was discussed was in the Federalist Papers that I'm aware of. There's quotes and letters and different things between our founding fathers or speeches or whatever, but it was discussed in the Federalist Papers, and it was purely despised by all of our founding fathers. They wanted nothing to do with democracy. We are not a democracy. Just because we elect somebody doesn't make us a democracy, you know, in a democratic way or a way where, you know, democratic in the sense of popular vote. But it's the laws and the issues and the process of our government that has nothing to do. It's not up for a vote. It's not up for a discussion. We already know what needs to be done at that level. We have maxims. These things are all built up on maxims. And anybody with a reasonable mind can't deny all men are created equal, that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Nobody can deny that. Who can deny that? You know, maxims, undeniable truths. Water cannot go uphill. Who's going to argue that? And that's what maxims are. Our Constitution really is a list of maxims to a main degree, a major degree. Clearly, our principles of the Declaration of Independence is all maxims. I believe there were 8 biblical principles that put together the Declaration of Independence, and they are pretty much covered in the preamble of the Constitution. Just look at the preamble of the Constitution. It tells you exactly the purpose of government. And if they're not serving one of those, I think it's 7 points or 6 points, I don't remember. But in any event, if it's not serving one of those 6 or 7 points, whatever it is that they're doing, then they shouldn't be doing it. It has to fulfill something within our preamble to the Constitution. Okay, anyway, with that, again, we need help. There's a place anybody can help. Jan, do we have any other announcements?
Yes, there's a couple of announcements tonight, John, and a question or two.
All righty.
The first announcement is, we've been creeping up on a milestone, I would call it, and as of Sunday when I sent out the newsletter, there were 10,008 members, so we've surpassed 10,000 members now.
Great.
The second thing, I'm sure you're all aware that there are Red Pill Expos twice a year. The next one coming up is in Indianapolis, Indiana, and it's going to be July 9th and 10th of this year. I put a reference for the website in the newsletter so you can click it and get information on it. They got some really great speakers. Dr. David Martin's going to be there. He's always exceptional. Del Bigdry and Brian Artis as well. Now, I had set up here the cost. The costs are somewhat dependent on the time that you sign up. For example, right now, they're in the early bird phase, which the prices are good through the 30th of June. And there's many ways that you can do this. If you want a live stream, you don't have the time or the money or the inclination to go to Indianapolis, WKRP country, you can order the live stream. for $40, and I believe that replay stays open until October 11th of this year, so you have a long time where you can just click and select any of the talks and listen to it over and over if you like, or go through the whole thing a number of times. If you want to go, the cheapest way to go right now is $205. Or if you want to go as a VIP and wine and dine with the speakers and so on, the cheapest is $385. So I would encourage anybody close and take advantage of this and go listen to speakers. They're going to be great. Now, the questions that I have, I'll get through another layer here. I think, John, you were going to talk about the national assemblies and that sort of thing. Is that next week?
Well, maybe I will. I know Brent talked last week about Thomas Jefferson. You know, Brent and I don't agree on everything, and that's a good thing, you know. One of us has a better view maybe than the other, and as time goes on, you discuss it, and hopefully we change each other's views. But if we don't, as long as we agree on the basic principles of what we're doing here, that's the key. And our understanding ultimately of liberty and common law and where it comes from and so on. So I think next week I want to do a little bit of a thing on Jefferson. I did do a thing on Jefferson and our founding fathers with slavery, which you could see that at, let me see if I can open that page up real quick where that might be. Let me think. I believe it's under the education. It is under educational videos. Let me open that tab up. And it should be the first video here. If anybody missed that, we did do this live originally here on our Monday night program. But it's the Founding Fathers and Slavery in America. And it's 26 minutes long. This is also up on Rumble. So you can watch it on Rumble or you can come to this page. The page is found under Educational Starts here. Come down to educational videos. Actually, all these educational videos should be really watched if you haven't seen them. So people should peruse through this and see once what they may really get. They'll get a lot of knowledge out of it, not a lot of history, and they'll get the truth. I'd like to tell you that, and I'm going to prove this next week, and I wanted to do it this week, but I just had too many things, and I just couldn't get the time to put things together. But I'm going to prove to people that fake news has been around for a long, long time. And we have to be able to see it when it comes up. And we need to just go into the history and examine the truth. We can see our conversations between our founding fathers. So we can see their speeches. We see their actions, what they've done, what Jefferson had done in Congress. He served twice. What he'd done as a governor. What he'd done as a patriot with the Committee of Safety and was asked to write the Declaration of Independence. His work with Madison, to come together with the Bill of Rights with the Federalist, the Anti-Federalist Papers. A lot of people say, well, the Republican Party, he started that, and he was... No, Jefferson was not involved with any political parties. He despised them. He was right on board with Washington over that. And no way did he want any involvement with that. But they were defined as Republicans and Federalist, and that was the big things. The Republicans against the Republicans against the Federalists. And I would be really later on to be known as the Anti-Federalists, and it wasn't that they were against the federal government; they were just against big government and federal government. That was the difference. Hamilton really pushed hard towards a stronger federal government. He pushed hard towards a more better connection with Britain, and he was mentored by bankers, so he believed in the national bank. And he had these very strong beliefs and thinking. I do not believe, and I have not seen anything that would make me think or believe that Hamilton was the enemy. I hear a lot of people talking about that, and because he was on that side to some degree, there may be the appearance of dangers. But Jefferson saw the dangers. He tried to warn Washington of it. Again, this is in history. well documented, and so he really didn't care too much for Hamilton in a sense, at least politically speaking. But he was one of our founding fathers, and he was respected by Jefferson and the other founding fathers. And I'm not going to get too much into these stories. We're going to talk about that next week. And we're going to have some really good witnesses that will come up that were living in those days, talking about the issues and the problems and the maligning of our founding fathers. If you want to destroy America, destroy Jefferson, because he is the heart and soul. Without Jefferson, there is no America. There is no Bill of Rights. There is no Declaration of Independence. We would be something different, something else. Our structure would not be the way it is. It just would not be here. And I think that's true with a lot of our founding fathers from different perspectives, though. Without a George Washington, I don't think there'd be an America either. You know, without a Benjamin Franklin, the elder, I don't think there'd be an American. Without a James Madison, I don't think there'd be an America. Especially the Bill of Rights, there'd be no Bill of Rights. And Madison was very principled in that, and he was the big argument in the Federalist Papers and in the Anti-Federalist Papers. He made a lot of arguments and a lot of points. Him and Jefferson collaborated on this, and Jefferson was away at the time, but they were collaborating. They had the same minds. They were just very unique individuals with a similar background and a highly educated. Tutored and self-educated, tutored when they were younger, self-educated for the rest of their lives in many, many different things, especially Jefferson. He was even a scientist. We'll look at that next Monday. Now, the question was on another subject. What was the other subject, Jan? Did you bring that up?
I just read if you wanted to talk about the National Assemblies, or do you want to move on?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to spend some time on that, but right now, I think people, between now and the time, I can spend time. Maybe the following week, we'll talk some more. I don't want to spend too much time. I'd like people to come in here and take a look. If you go down here underneath our Welcome tab, this is a brand new page I put up there this week, NLA and the Sovereign Citizen Movement. If you click on that tab, and read through this. It makes the position of who we are as a national group and what our thoughts and ideas are concerning this movement, the sovereign citizen movement. And they, to some degree, with the meaning of citizen and sovereign together, they would see a problem with that, and I do too, to some degree, from the way they try to make the word citizen means. They try to give a new meaning to words. That's one of the things the enemy does. They infiltrate. They change things. They change the meanings of things. And they alter the main focus of the organization that they come in as parasites and take over and steer into a direction that really brings us into slavery and not liberty. But anyway, people should read through this, and let's have a discussion. Maybe next week we can discuss this, and I don't know that I want to read through it or get too deep into it. But generally speaking, I was listening to, I think his first name is David, or I think it's David, David Strait. Is that his name, Gerard Strait?
Yep.
Is his first name David? Okay.
David Strait.
I was listening to him this week. Someone shared a video with me, and it was 2.5 hours long and very interesting. I didn't hear anything I disagreed with as far as knowledge of a fact, okay? There were things he brought up that and got into deeper information and details on that I'm not familiar with and I wasn't aware of, but I don't deny it. And I understand the game they played and how they erected this government within a government, creating a new governor for America with a new direction. That's exactly what they did. And they play games with words And in any event, they constructed this prison, this statutory prison, and I think he lays it out very well, okay? The problem I find is this, the solution. You're not going to beat them. Occasionally someone might be able to beat them in the solutions he's offering. It'd be very difficult, but generally speaking, as most, you're not going to. It's much easier to focus in on the fact that it's a fraud. It's unlawful. Let's deal with it from that perspective. Let's call it for what it is. Let's demand our courts back. Let's demand our political process back. Let's demand obedience to the Constitution. Let's chain them down with the chains of the Constitution. I will bind them down, as Jefferson said, with the chains of the Constitution. That's what we need to do. But here's the big problem. And I know a lot of people, you know, and we come from this background ourselves. I myself come from this background, and so does Gerard. This is part of the path we took to get to where we are. So we have a decent understanding of what they're doing and what they're talking about, and the fact that it is true. I've done enough research to know exactly, and I listened to his layout. He's absolutely right. But here's the problem. It's really involved to understand all this stuff. And my question is why bother? Why put all of our time to understand that much of the enemy, of the inner workings and their process and their procedures and all this garbage, okay? And I know, you know, Strait agrees with me, all this garbage, in the sense this is their garbage, we're trying to deal with it. When we'd be better off learning history of our founding fathers, learning the common law, learning the court process, how the judiciary should be going forward, what their powers and authorities is, what's the difference between law and equity, what's up with the Constitution, how do we really interpret the Constitution? Let's look at the Federalist Papers, because if you really want to know the meaning of things in the Constitution that, A, you might pass by and don't even realize you just didn't see something there when there's a lot there. You know, there's a lot in a lot of these things. I mean, goodness, they debated this twice from two different perspectives, one Federalist and one Anti-Federalist. And so go read the Federalist Papers. We have the Federalist Papers. Turn on the audio, listen to it, and open up the PDF and read along with it. Pause the audio, rewind, understand, see the debate, the argument. They go point by point to the Constitution, building. This was the debates. This was the discussion that gave us the Constitution. And the insertion of the Bill of Rights comes in ultimately from the Anti-Federalist Papers. They wanted to reduce the size of government. And let me tell you, what a masterpiece the Bill of Rights is. I've heard people say, we really didn't need a Bill of Rights. On the one hand, if we didn't have the enemy, that might be true. But on the other hand, we do have the enemy. And it is the exact thing that has saved us. People believe, they were born believing in America that they have a right to have a weapon. They were born to believe they have a right of freedom of religion, freedom of speech. They were born believing this. Why? Because it's in the Bill of Rights. It's in the fabric of America. They've destroyed so much. They've demoralized us so much. But we still have those things. And it's inborn in us. You know, you take people from South America and from Mexico that have been coming into this country and infiltrating. They have a whole different mindset. They don't have that from a birth. They don't have that as a mindset as a child coming up just believing that these are their rights. This is the problem they have, is trying to shake that out of the people. And, of course, that's why they want a lot of foreigners in here, so and have them voting, because they're going to get whatever it is that they get to get into this country, and they have no clue on what's really going on, what the debate really is and the problem really is, and how liberty is being shortchanged and stolen from us if we lose our Bill of Rights. So the Bill of Rights was a very powerful paper, absolute necessity. It is the very, very document that has saved this nation and kept it at least. You know, America is still in one piece. The whole structure, there's nothing wrong with our political structure. There's nothing wrong with our political process. There's nothing wrong with our judicial structure and the judicial process. The problem is the enemy that has seized control of these things and inserting their poison into our legislation. And we just have to clean that up, and that's why we support the Republic Review. I know GR is going to be talking hopefully soon, in the next couple of weeks. We'll have him talk some more about the Republic Review. People might want to bone up on that now. You can read about the Republic Review under the Starter Committee of Safety and come down to Republic Review. There's a few short videos in here, and there's some paragraphs explaining what it is. And it's a very, very good plan. We definitely support this movement. And we encourage all of the committees of safety to participate with this movement to bring a Republic Review along and clean up all of the bad legislation on the federal level. There's a lot of bad legislation that needs to be cleaned up on state levels, too. But if we clean up the federal level, and then we're able to live under that Constitution as pure as possible, that will protect us against any state constitution that is repugnant to our liberties, because that is the true ruler. The way we can discover truth and what is right and wrong in what these people are doing in their legislation is to take the ruler, which is the Bill of Rights. If anything that they have to think, do, or say and to put into this legislation injures any of our liberties, it's null and void. It's that simple. And the principles of our liberty is laid out very well in the Bill of Rights. It's a unique and very well thought out paper. And it is the really that and maybe a few lines in the Constitution that might have been added after reconsideration coming up from the federal anti-federalist. And you know, at the end of the day, when Jefferson became president, in the very first words he started his speech on, his inaugurational speech when he came into power, his very, very first words were, "We are all Federalists. We are all Republicans." That says it all. There is no division. There shouldn't be no divisions. We want a federal government, but we want a republic that controls that federal government, and we want most of the power, as much power as possible in the states and whatever is necessary in the federal government. And that is how we have a really well put together structure of Republican governments, excuse me, that being the states and the Republican government being the United States, of course. All right, I've been kind of long on all that. Anything else, Jan?
Yes. This is from someone who's had a running feud with the IRS. And says, "I received the affidavit back this week after 8 months since it was sent to the address which supposedly was the person that was claiming I owed taxes to. I never received any lawful response for any of my demands to the certified forms 4, 4, 9, 0, and 56. Mm-hmm. My questions are, how should I handle this situation to make sure I cover myself from any trap?"
Well, it seems like you already did. Just sit back and relax and make them your footstool. Look, they come up, and my the book that I'm writing here on court access and the common law is going to deal with these problems. And, you know, I was really debating in myself how much time I wanted to put into this problem, because after devolution, this problem's not going to exist. But until devolution comes, it's helpful on the one hand. After devolution, it may take a little time to acclimate throughout the judicial process that there's a new sheriff in town, that the people are back in charge, and you need to start obeying the Constitution and put away this silly, destructive civil law thing that you think you had the power, that you think that the United States Supreme Court had the power and the authority to do and abrogate the common law by rule. It's just unbelievable that they fall for this and we actually allow this. But that's because of ignorance, lack of knowledge. That's the problem. That is the problem in America, knowledge. Knowledge will save this nation, because knowledge is power. And when you exercise that power with that knowledge, you win. One person can't do it. That's why the people have to do it. We have government by the consent of the people. Okay, and we don't need everybody involved. We just need the people who are involved. We don't need to get everybody in the United States on the same page. That'll never happen. But we don't. You know, again, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. We need to be the participators. We need to take this nation back. We have a duty to save this republic. We have a duty to ourselves, to our neighbors, to our children, to our posterity. We have a duty. Do not shirk from that duty. Anybody who is not doing something is shirking from that duty. Get involved. Do something. Save this republic. Anyway, as far as it sounds like he did everything he had to do. Any letter they write, answer, look it. They're going to say things, and you're going to say, you know, where is this? How is this? I got a powerful paper. It's going to be in memorandum form. It'll be in the book, and I'll make it available for free if anybody wants it, of course. But that paper will be a memorandum concerning the power and the authority by which the IRS operates by, and how the law is, and how it doesn't involve you. It doesn't talk about you. You know, and all of these codes they use, I ran down the rabbit hole of these codes, and only to discover their true meanings, and it has nothing to do with you. Also, there's the Cooper file, which you know, I am putting into the book. I think it's 14 pages or something, 12 pages. The Cooper file is an extremely powerful documented document. I mean, it is powerful. Lays out how the IRS came to be, how they moved themselves into as a fixture within our government back in, I think it was 71 or 73. I forget the exact year, but it was in the 70s. I remember that, and how they put themselves in. And how, you know, and this was all done by lawyers. This was done by the bar attorneys. This was done by the minions of the New World Order. And they steered everything, the legislators. There is no legislative authority for the IRS to be. Or the alcohol, tobacco, what is it, ATF? Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. ATFA, I guess. Whatever it is, firearm. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. They don't.
Yeah.
B is it?
BATM, Bureau of...
Bureau, that is. Okay.
Right. Bureau of
right. They do not exist but through legislation, nor could they have existed through legislation ultimately, because there's no authority in the Constitution to give it to them. The sole purpose of these two agencies ultimately is to enslave the people with a slave tax and so on and so forth. So, but in any event... any letters? Do not ever let a letter from the government just sit around, because you are just acquiescent to them, and they are building. Every time they send a letter and you don't answer, they're building the case. They're pounding it down. They're preparing for a court case against you. Okay, that's what they're doing. And you could destroy that entire court case by responding with questions on everything they say. Where does it say that? How do I know? How does that apply to me? You know, just read through and answer the best you can. But I'm going to give some good info on this. It'll come out of my book. You know, and again, I think I'm spending more time in my book on that issue than I should. You know, it's just a little part of my book. There's a lot more stuff or a lot more things, but it's a part that I may be spending a little too much time on, but it is an important part. And we need to respond. And I'll tell you, the memorandum of law, you go into court and you bring that memorandum of law. You see, you can only argue whatever is in your pleadings, and that includes your memorandums of law. They're going to try to throw everything out through the process, working through the pleadings. They're going to make motions to strike and do this and all that stuff, and you got to defend that. And then you even have to appeal it to some degree. Going up line, appealing that decision, and to make sure that it stays in the case, because the bottom line, the day when the jury is connected and brought into that courtroom, you need to be able to free that jury. You need to be able to take a jury that has been captured and stacked against you, okay, and liberate them, and make them so that they understand the powers and the authorities of who they are as a people. And you will not be able to do that if you don't have it in your pleadings, because the judge will shut you right up, say, you can't talk about that. And the main reason I think they're getting away with saying that ultimately is because it's not in the pleadings, I think, as far as when you get into the court case. But I'll tell you, they try to destroy your evidence. They try to throw your evidence out. It's an uphill battle. But remember, after devolution, it's going to be turned around. It's going to be an uphill battle for them, and we'll have the upper hand on this. Even though they're in the courts, we can destroy them. And we will continue with these tyrants for consideration of indictments when they come up against the people and deny them habeas corpus, deny them their powers and authorities as of the people, deny them their unalienable rights in a court of law, to deny them and to allow all of these things to be struck out of their pleadings, you know. So anyway, that kind of stuff this is the kind of stuff that's in the book. And again, the book should be read as a book, but used as a reference book. and maybe read twice, maybe read three times, because the more and more you go over these things and just reading and making sure you understand as you read, the more it sticks into the brain, the more it solidifies. And the next thing you know, after two or three readings of this and working on papers and exercising or practicing to exercise them, for a court, the more and more you do that, the more and more it sticks. And the next thing you know, you'll be talking and it's just spilling out of your mouth. You say, where did that come from? I didn't even know I remembered that. It's just the nature of the way the mind is. So studying, reading, understanding is the key. Knowledge is liberty and freedom and power. All right, anything else?
Well, there are two other parts to that question. Let me read them both, and you've hit on part of it.
Okay.
Should I open my return to communication or keep it as is for my records, and what can I expect if I do not respond to the returned letter?
If you do not respond, you acquiesce to the position that they made in the paper. You're accepting them, what they're saying is truth.
Yeah,
now,
I think he's talking about a letter they returned to her, right, or him, right?
Oh, okay.
Am I right, Jan, or did I get that wrong?
Well, they sent the affidavit back, so I assume that that's what she's talking about.
Okay, well, if whatever's missing, whatever is sent back, look at when you write a paper, every letter I ever write to a government agency, which isn't many, but many to the IRS maybe, but not to anyone else, many other agencies, any letter I write to a government agency, I started off as an affidavit. It's a sworn statement put on top of it. This is a sworn statement, and then I get it notarized at the end. This is true, and so on and so forth. And that's an affidavit. So if you've done that letter in an affidavit form, and they sent that letter back to you, as far as you're concerned, they received it as long as you documented the receiving of that document, because you should have a certified slip proving it. You don't have to have the green card returned. You need to just have that green certified slip. And then a week or two later, you just take the number, you go up online, and you can see the picture of the signatures, and you can download the signatures. So instead of having the green card and paying the extra money for that, you could just go up and download it, and you could download the signatures. But in any event, that certification proves the fact that you send it to them and they got it. What they did with it from that point forward, I don't care what they do with it. They don't have to respond to it. As far as I'm concerned, they acquiesce to my points and my position and my thinking, and that's the bottom line. So document everything, certify everything, and everything is an affidavit, so that's documented and certifying. When you send your mail out, that should be certified. That's documented and certified. You've got proof, and you've laid it out. And again, you got to get the law, the true law, your position into pleadings if you end up in court. And here's the other thing, and this is one of the most important things. I have never, ever, ever been sued by the IRS. They have come out to sue me, and I beat them to the punch, became the plaintiff, opened up a court of record, brought it into the state. They may have yanked it into the federal court, but they have no power or authority. They have no jurisdiction. They don't have subject matter jurisdiction. They don't have personal jurisdiction. Now, I only believe that they didn't have personam jurisdiction, but I realize now they don't have subject matter jurisdiction either, because you see, the IRS is not a government agency. And even if it was a government agency, I believe I could make this case, even if it was a government agency, when those individuals stepped outside of their jurisdiction, outside of the authority that they have, and they came out after you and assaulted you and trying to get money from you, okay, that's a crime. That's fraud, and they no longer have any protection. They acted outside of their authority, so therefore, they don't have the protection. It's not like they acted within their authority and within their jurisdiction and made a mistake. It's not like that. No, it's they stepped right outside, and they came upon you to destroy you, okay, because that's what they're doing. They don't even realize it, but that's what they're doing. So, and I never sued the IRS directly. I sued the commissioner of the IRS. I believe that was his title, commissioner. And I sued the agents involved. I sued the sheriff because the defense sheriff from seizing my property. I sued the county clerk in order to get the county clerk involved because they've accepted a lien that doesn't exist. and they become part of the problem. That's a fraud. That's a crime. The fact that they give you a notice of lien is a crime because there's no Form 4490. They have no Form 56. They have no fiduciary authority, no proof of claim. It's all fraud. You see, this is documentation. This is building a case. And I'm going to talk about these things, in the book. And again, you know, soon it may not be necessary, but I'll get it out. And you can apply it towards other things than anyway, other government agencies to some degree. But this most powerful paper I read, matter of fact, the court case that I have, let me just get back to the suing. The IRS cannot seize your property without first serving notice. They cannot get access to your bank without serving notice. You have 7 days. When they told me that they're going to put a lien, which is required, and they do that, and they have to do that, and they're taught to do that, so it's part of their process, so they should have changed that a long time ago. But once they do that, I know I got 7 days to act. I'm protected. My documents, my financial information in my financial institution, I'm protected by the Bill of Rights. And not only am I protected there, there's also the Safe, what is it called? Safe Something Act. I have to think about that. In any event, there is an act that requires, that lays out, they lay out the idea, for instance, if a pirate steals a pirate is caught at sea and they seize the ship, let's say, this is just a kind of an example, it's the law of the sea, and that's what this is, because they go after you in a process called INREM, I-N-R-E-M, and they apply that to the people, and it's the same thing as piracy. So if a pirate gets snagged and they steal his, they get their ship and they escape, okay, well, they bring that into the harbor, Safe Harbor Act, that's what it's called. We're protected by banks by the Safe Harbor Act, and because that's a commercial activity there, the banks. But anyway, so they take the ship, they seize control of the ship, they bring it into harbor, and they file a proof of claim on it, which is all an affidavit, and now the pirates have 30 days to claim the property. They still get due process. The thing is in REM, they go after the product, they go after the property and not the person. Where in this, on the law of the land, they have to go after the person first, give them due process before they can take their property. But at sea, they can seize the property directly in REM. And so that's what they do. That's what the IRS does. They seize our property and our bank accounts in REM. And so when you notify the bank that you have not given, because see, the bank will not by law, unless they're ignorant, and they may be ignorant, they will not by law release your information to the IRS if you immediately jump on top of that serving of the 7 day of a notice that within 7 days we're going to seize your money. So you jump on it real quick and get to the bank to let them know you release any information, you give them any documentation, I'm going to sue you, you're going to be part of the lawsuit, and I'm going to take everything I can take from you. And you go after the principals of the bank. You go after the board in the bank, the president. You go after all of the individuals and the institution itself, the bank. The other thing to prevent yourself from money being taken is to sue the sheriff. That ties his hand. Then to sue the clerk, and that ties their hand. They can't move paperwork in a process in REM because there is no true documentation. There's no affidavit. It doesn't exist. It never exists. There's no government agent that will ever, and I've never seen it, and I've been looking at this for a while, no one has ever signed an affidavit. No government agent, well, they're not even government agents, IRS agents, none of them will ever sign an affidavit, which is a proof of claim, against the property and lay that out, because it's all a lie. And they don't even know how to write it up, and they can't. So they can't swear to it. So the whole thing was a lie, and guess what? That's fraud. That's fraud on the court. As soon as the U.S. attorney gets involved, looks at that, and understands what's going on, and he should, and if he doesn't, shame on him. We'll go after him anyway. You know, that's no excuse. He should know what he's doing. Okay, there. And as soon as you let them know that there is no lien sitting in the federal district court, And as soon as he continues with that process, and him working with the judge, and the judge knows it, and the U.S. attorney knows it, now that is fraud on the court. Fraud on the court can only be put against the officials of the court. You know, fraud on the court is done by officers of the court, not the people. Okay, that's a different. That would be a different charge. It could be fraud, but it could be a different charge. So anyway, those are the things you could do to protect yourself. And then immediately, once I did all that, I knew they were coming out after me. So, and you should know that too. Once you go through that, they're going to be upset that you've done that. They're going to come out after you. And so what you need to do is sue them in a state court and start your motion. Once they pull you into federal court, you can show that they don't have jurisdiction personam. That's a hands down, very easy to show. You do a motion to move back into the state court. And also you could do the same thing and let them know they don't have subject matter jurisdiction either, because this isn't a government agency. It is a commercial thing, so to some degree there could be an argument there, but they definitely do not have, personam jurisdiction. All right, I spent a lot of time on this. Anything else? Because we got to move on. Jen?
No, that was it, John. That's the last
one. All right, I'm going to pass things over to Gerard. We do have people in the queue, so we'll get to the queue after. Let me see. We have two people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, or hit your button on your app to get into the queue. I'm going to pass it over to you, Gerard. I'll introduce Brent first and then pass it to you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. And then after Brent, you can take the Q&A and whatever else comes up. Okay, Brent, you ready? You with us here? I put you to sleep there.
No, I didn't. I'm looking for the button, but I just got to email. Thanks. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right, here's Brent Winters, and he's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law and numerous other books and booklets. And his website is commonlawyer.com, and he's going to teach us something today. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and I'm here, as always, to give you my studied opinion on some particular matter I've taken time to look at. And of course, when I say studied opinion, that means I only know what I read, regardless of the subject. That's what it ultimately comes down to, and I've been... Of course, I spend a lot of time with law cases, one of the things I do. And one of my convictions after all these 40-some years of piling my brains into this stuff is that all the court stuff is important and all of the government stuff is important and it has to happen. But it cannot and will not ever happen right. As long as there's less than a critical mass of Americans that are spitting in God's face. That's really what it comes down to. All of my years, for whatever they're worth, have taught me that. I watch what God does to people. And he's not messing around. He's not everything people say he is. He's not always just a nice guy. Matter of fact, you don't ever refer to him that way. He's God. And he doesn't tolerate any deviation from your position and your responsibility to give him respect any more than your father, your own father, or your mother. If they're thinking right at all, they're not going to tolerate your disrespect. Do you think that God the Father, the maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is any less that way? In fact, he's perfect. And he never misses a beat. And he always gets what he wants out of his people. So, speaking of fathers, I want to read to you what the courts have said about the law of God respecting fathers and mothers. This is a fascinating study. This is taken from an appendix, appendix number, what is it, one? Well, 114. Appendix 114 from the Good Book Uncooked, the Common Lawyer Translates and Annotates the Bible from the Original Tongues. This is appendix 114. I'll just read it. Maybe I'll find a typo in here. That helps too. But let me read it. God's foremost command in our common law courts. That's the name of this appendix to the winterized version of the Bible. Paul the Apostle says that the command to honor father and mother is foremost among God's commandments. Indeed, it is the only command of the Ten Commandments that is first cast in the imperative form. It's a command. The other nine are not commands. They're standards. They're statements of a standard, but they are not commanded. But this one is commanded, and you can see that in the English translations. This is the only one that comes across like a command. The rest of them are future statements of future indicative. Thou shalt not kill. That's a statement of the future. Honor thy father and mother. That's a command, and it's in the Hebrew tongue. It's in the imperative form. Second, it's accompanied with a promise. It's the only one of the ten that has a promise attached to it. And that's why it's a command. If you obey the command, the promise is yours. That's what it says. And what is the promise? That you'll live long on the land that the Lord your God has given you. You dishonor, slight, even slight, and that's what the Hebrew word means, to slight your parents. If you do that, or slight their memory, then God says you're not going to live long on the land that he gave you. Paul the Apostle applied that to the Ephesians up in Asia Minor. In the sixth chapter of his letter to the Ephesians, he said, you honor your parents up there, you Ephesians. You honor them so that you may live long on the land the Lord your God has given you up there in Asia Minor. Well, we get down to John Locke Accords, holding that all government and authority flows from the fifth commandment in this way, because all government authority flows from the natural authority of fathers and mothers and families. That is the foundation of all government among mankind. And if there is no respect for mother and father, there will be no government among mankind that's going to fix anything. That's what the Bible is telling us. Our American courts have steadfastly upheld, I'm reading from the appendix here, appendix 144, or 14, have steadfastly upheld the authority of this fifth commandment as good law, showing its applicability to many kinds of disputes that have bobbed forth from the flux of family life. Common law courts enforce duty to honor father and mother. That's the next heading. Now here's the first case, and I'm going to read you the facts of this case. It's about what the court said about the fifth commandment. Honor thy father and thy mother. A native of Canada with her husband became naturalized U.S. citizens after her husband had died. She returned to Canada to care for her elderly and infirm mother. As a result, pursuant to the Nationality Act, the U.S. State Department took her citizenship papers for expatriation. Upon her having petitioned the court to return those papers, the court ruled as follows, and I'm quoting. The court said this, the sole and only reason for plaintiffs going to Canada was, as before stated, the condition of her mother, and the fact that her mother, who had no other children, had no one else to look after her, and she did not have sufficient funds to secure the attention she needed, even if such attention could have been procured by the payment of wages to someone to look after her, it was of such compelling necessity for plaintiff to take care of her mother as to amount to and was duress of such a nature that she did not and should not have resisted taking care of her. To have failed her mother at this time would have been in violation of all instincts of loyalty of a child for its parent, and the court says, contrary to the fifth commandment of the Bible. Now, this case is a 1952 case. I'm going to read some other cases, Lord willing, if my computer allows me to, from quotes from cases from 1982 from the state of New York that pretty much, of course, say the same thing in support of this fifth of the Ten Commandments. Right now, I can't get to the rest of it because my computer is pinwheeling. It may not stop for all I know, so I'm just going to wait and see. But this is of utmost importance. If you can't get this straight, again, this is my studied opinion. If you can't get this straight, you may as well go crawl in a groundhog hole and leave people alone, because you're part of the problem of bad government in America. It all starts right here. So if your mother or father is living or deceased, do not speak of them in a less than very respectful way. And it doesn't make any difference what kind of a scoundrel you may think your father was or your mother. That's not given as an option according to God. I think I've told the story on this platform about a fellow I went to school with. He was a Mexican from Mexico. He was from that province of Mexico that comes right up against the American border on the more on the western side of the boundary between the two countries. And the people there, kind of tall people. And his mother was a hooker in L.A. And we got to be pretty good friends, and he was telling me that he was trying to figure out a way to honor his mother without condoning her lifestyle, but being respectful toward her. And we had a long discussion about it, came to some conclusions about what he could do. Maybe you're in that kind of a situation to varying degrees. There's always something you can do. Well, the court said this, the pinwheel has stopped. To have failed her mother, this Canadian woman, at this time would have been in violation of instincts. We'd said that, contrary to the fifth commandment, honor thy father and mother, says the court, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord God giveth thee. The plaintiff, the court continues, performed her God-commanded duty to her mother, with the result that certain United States agents are now attempting to forfeit her citizenship in this country. You think that government agents have just been bad the last few decades? No, it goes back there 70 years. That was 70 years ago. Such should a dutiful daughter be deprived. Should a dutiful daughter be deprived of the priceless possession of her American citizenship for doing nothing other than her family duty? The court says, I think not. And in view of all the facts and circumstances of this case, I hold that plaintiff's stay in Canada was in legal effect involuntary, and as such, it could not be a ground for forfeiture of her nationality and citizenship in the United States of America. You see what the court's saying here? They're saying the instinct that this woman, instinct, we're talking about something that animals have, familial affection. Animals have that. She had that. And they said because it is an instinct of an irresistible force to take care of her mother, we don't care what the statute says. The government of the United States has no business using the statute against her for something she couldn't help. Now, the Bible goes on to say that in the latter days, and we're apparently in those days, that children will lose familial affection. In other words, the natural instincts of affection for their parents. Well, let's go to another one. Another case, another public policy issue applying this fifth commandment bobbed forth. I'm reading again from Appendix 114 of the Good Book Uncooked, the Winterized Bible. Another public policy issue applying this fifth commandment bobbed forth in the case Equity Investments versus Paris. Miss Paris moved her elderly parents into her apartment's spare bedroom in violation of her lease. The civil court of Queens County, and I assume that's in New York, described the case. And here's what the court said. An interesting dilemma of a conflict between two laws, one written in stone approximately 3,500 years ago, and the other written by mere mortals in the year 1962. The former is the fifth of the Ten Commandments given to Moses on Mount Sinai, and the latter is Section 52A of the New York Rent Control Regulations. The court continues, if we had the eyes to see the subtle elements of thought, which constitute the gross substance of our present habit, both as regards the sphere of private life and as regards the action of the state, we would easily discover how very much we owe to the Ten Commandments and other contributions to Western law. The public policy of this state, that is the state of New York, and I think this is a 1981 case. This is 1981, the courts of New York. The public policy of this state, as expressed by statute and decisional law, is not in conflict with the fifth of the Ten Commandments. It is all too rare in these troublesome times of self-indulgence to find people willing to sacrifice their own comfort and serenity for the sake of their parents. Therefore, far be it for the courts to punish such devotion. And then the case Beatty versus McGoldrick. Beatty versus McGoldrick, a landlord besought to evict a tenant from an apartment so his elderly father could move in. The court concluded as follows, again quoting the court, here I go. Consequently, the sole issue to be reviewed is the finding that the landlord failed to establish the existence of an immediate and compelling necessity. Such necessity seems to have been amply demonstrated. To give comfort and to heal the man in his last years who, though he may be undeserving, is the father, husband, and grandfather of the family unit, conforms not only to the very essence of the Decalogue, that's the Ten Commandments Decalogue, but is an immediate and compelling necessity in every sense of that term. That's some stabbing language. Even though the father may be undeserving. Gerard, did you say something?
I said this is New York State. I'm flabbergasted.
Yeah, this is New York State in 1981. I'm glad you asked me to reiterate. Of all places, listen to the court. I'm going to continue. Honor to a father depends not upon his worthiness, said the courts of New York in a recent case, but is commanded in spite of worthiness. Granting visitation rights to the father of an illegitimate child, the family court of New York in Ulster County wrote as follows. Just another case from New York. The willingness of the court to afford this father an opportunity to permit Joanna to come once again to know, love, and respect him as her father should not be regarded as novel. In fact, it but reflects the ancient wisdom of God's laws given to Moses on Mount Sinai, wherein, as the fifth commandment of the Decalogue, it is written, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God hath given thee. That's from Pierce versus Yakovich. That's New York. Courts, Family Court, New York Family Court, 1974, quoting Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. And let me continue. We talk about how bad the courts are, how bad the legislators are. It's refreshing to know that not everybody has bowed the knee to Baal. You can find a few in California versus Copas. The state of California sued in the Texas courts to require an adult son to pay for the care of his mentally ill mother. The Texas Supreme Court ruled that Copas, that's the fellow's name, must make back payments up to the time of his removal to Texas. However, Justice Greenhill dissented, arguing that Copas should be required to pay support even after moving to Texas, noting as follows. Now listen to the court. Here goes. The fifth commandment is honor thy father and thy mother. Like others in the code of laws, it is directed to the adult citizen who is burdened with the care of an aged parent and is a warning against the heathen habit of abandoning the aged parent when they can no longer support themselves. Texas should not become a haven for deserting providers who would ignore or repudiate their duty to support. Courts have invoked the Fifth Commandment in cases, this is me talking here, courts have invoked the Fifth Commandment in cases where children have struck their parents. Sipp versus Coleman held that beating one's mother or striking one's mother is an act of moral turpitude because, quoting the court, the obligations of the Fifth Commandment are recognized by the secular as well as the ecclesiastical law. The family relation, I'm quoting the court, the family relation is the basis upon which the entire social superstructure is erected. The dishonoring of the parent by the child injuriously affects the whole social fabric. Very low, indeed, is the scale of civilization. That would a community be that recognized no distinction in morals between an assault and battery by one stranger upon another and an assault and battery by a son upon his own mother? Let me move on. Unlike the rest of the states of our union, this is me speaking, Louisiana is a law of the city, civil law jurisdiction. But in Landry versus Himmel, the Fifth Commandment held sway with the Louisiana courts as the court dealt with an altercation between a father and his adult daughter. I'm going to quote the court. Here we go. The conclusion is inescapable. That she frequently irritated and abused him, and failed to show the honor and respect due a parent by a child, whatever his age. Required by both the civil and the moral law, Article 215 of the Louisiana Civil Code provides that a child, whatever be his age, owes honor and respect to his father and mother. This rule of the civil law is founded upon the Mosaic law, expressed in the Fifth Commandment, to honor thy father and mother. It is true, this command implies that the father and the mother will conduct themselves toward the children in such a way as to merit honor and respect from them. But the first duty is upon the child. You see, this goes along with that first case I read that said the duty to honor parents is not dependent upon whether or not they're honorable. Now, this court soft-pedals it a little more, but says the same thing. I don't think it should be soft peddled this way, but does acknowledge the first duty is on the child, and there are no provisos, no exceptions, no quid pro quos here. Oh, my dad treats me right, I treat him right. No. You may need to get away from him, but you better not dishonor his memory or dishonor him. The Court of Common Pleas of Philadelphia County, Pennsylvania, refused a daughter's petition to appoint a guardian for her father because, said the court, she exhibited complete indifference to the Fifth Commandment of the Decalogue, honor thy father and thy mother. Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. And that case is from 1964, a Pennsylvania case, N. Ray Axes Estate, AXES. In Feller versus Universal Funeral Chapel, the Supreme Court, the trial court of New York County, and remember in New York, the trial court is called the Supreme Court, and what is called the Supreme Court in other states is called the Court of Appeals. And I think, and California does the same thing, and whatever else bad you may say about those places, in the beginning they got those names right, because the fundamental court, the Supreme Court, is the trial court. That's where the jury makes their decision. Well, let me read this. Feller versus Universal Funeral Chapel. New York County, refused a daughter's request for the ashes of her father because, quoting the court, she did not exhibit respect for her father that we expect from one of her background, social as well as cultural. She was unmindful of the Fifth Commandment and sought to determine for herself a privilege reserved only to those claiming omniscience. That means all-knowingness. The standard which would justify her recognition of her father, that is, not the thinking of a dutiful daughter. In Stramler versus Coe, the Texas Supreme Court held that the Bible's words, I'm quoting the court, honor thy father and thy mother is a command not only of the Decalogue but also of nature. And suits in which benefit can be claimed only through the alleged turpitude of a parent are to be discouraged. In other words, we're not even going to tolerate children going after their parents. Finally, in Raymond versus Superior Court, the Court of Appeals reasoned that search and seizure law concerning police officers forcing a boy to enter his father's bedroom should be strictly construed in the family home, because the Fourth Amendment conceivably incorporates some elements of the biblical Fifth Commandment. Well, getting back to my conclusions, that was from a 1971 case in California, Raymond versus Superior Court. See, they call it Superior Court in California. That's the trial court, just in a way, just like New York. Well, my conclusion again, there is no government. There will be no government, no good government, no right government, no hopeful government in America unless government in the family is right. And that starts, and the first duty, as the court said, is with the child, showing respect for father and mother. By the way, it doesn't say, as my cousin Gary Hudson always said, it doesn't say father or mother. It says father, the copulative is conjunctive, and mother. And it's also progressive. It also is consecution in the Hebrew text. That means you honor your father. Honor to your father is honor to your mother. And honor to your mother is honor to your father. And dishonor to your father is dishonor to your mother, and vice versa. That's where all good government begins. Every one of us, and everyone who can hear me right now, has a father and a mother, either deceased or living. Let's get started right now doing what's right, what God commands of his creatures, to honor them that gave us life, regardless of what you think about them, regardless of what insults have been thrown. And you, my friend, you will enjoy the benefit, and you will enjoy the benefit of having done what your Maker says to do. This is Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Thank you, John and Gerard, again, for letting me say a few words. And may God bless our country, and God bless father and mother. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Well, that made my night, because you said so many good things about New York State.
Yeah. No, I noticed that, too, and it was kind of fun to do. It was kind of fun to do, because we hear so many. There are negative things to say, no question, about New York State and other states, but The truth is still there, and the truth will prevail, and this commandment is the truth. And God's going to get his way, so let's just fall in line now.
Well, I'll tell you what, those cases need to be brought up in the family court and remind them, because you haven't heard any kind of language like that come out of New York State family court any time recently.
No.
And they believe in precedents over there so much, these new, you know, everything's precedent. Well, mm-hmm. These cases are on the book. You found them, right?
Yeah.
I think any good lawyer that's in that family court, and especially now because there's more of a sense of people going back to God because they're scared with this nation and what's going on, I think it's a very good time to push this stuff.
Don't forget California. He made quite a few statements concerning decisions in California, too.
I know, but I'm not living there.
I know, but I'm just saying, the other left, you know?
Well, I always said that. I said, look, California and New York, as bad as they are, I think they're going to be the first to change by virtue of the fact that they were so bad. It's like the change has to happen here, because if it doesn't happen here, it's going to be infecting the whole. If things go and happen in California, happen in New York, and then they march across, they meet in the middle of the United States. That's how everything goes.
That's right. I've seen that, too. And the courts of New York are, you read more, when in law school you read more cases from New York and California than probably any other states to get the general principles, because in the 1920s, the Court of Appeals, which we would call the Supreme Court of New York, was so influential. And the court in California during the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s was the same way for the entire country. And those were the bellwether states traditionally. And I don't think that's going to change. For good or ill, they're the bellwether states. Mm. Back to you, Gerard. I'll let you fellas talk, and I'll take a
break. Okay. We only got like 10 minutes, so I want to get going on the queue. Robbie, I'm going to unmute you. I don't know what state you're from, so maybe when you come on, you can let us know. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, yes. I'm a stickler and a lover that he talked about. Now, I've mentioned many times about Florida. Now, how about Florida? I guarantee you won't find any honorable parenting court cases there, because Florida, guess this, is what's called a child's right state. They have a doctrine straight out of hell. In that state, the child is right. All right? And so that is how they treat the parents. They allow in Florida, in the criminal courts and in the family courts, a child is allowed to hit the parent. If the parent defends themselves, the parent goes to jail. The police quickly will arrest the parent for discipline, a wayward child. The child is allowed to cuss the parent out, police the parent, run the house, and so on like that. Child Protective Services, CPS, told me my daughter can hit me, whatever she wants to do. If I defend myself, I go to jail, and they literally said it's their duty to protect the child's defiant behavior, quote, unquote. That's Florida. Now, what I wanted to ask you, John, was last week I mentioned, you mentioned for me to send you proof that I told you that.
I did see it, and I did look at it. And it does appear as if the sheriff's department has embedded their deputies into that agency, which is unlawful and could be challenged. But it's wrong. It should not be. It's unbelievable.
I told you. You didn't believe me. I told you.
Well, I know that they can't do it, but they did do it down there.
I told you. You didn't believe me. I lived there 20 years. I've been part of that abuse, you know. I've dealt with that, you know. So those tyrants, that's you know, trying to get my grandchildren out of their clutches, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they harmed my kids same way, you know, years ago.
Well, it's an uphill battle, but you can bring that. Look at, you can challenge jurisdiction.
I'm doing your process. They've already defaulted. I'm now at the removal. They've defaulted on that. Now I'm about to do the cease and desist and the sale and seizure. But you got to tell me, when does the writ of habeas corpus come in part?
You've done all this work. You should bring it into the federal court when you're ready, and you could do a habeas corpus into the federal court at the same time.
It's in there.
You could bring a federal. You can bring a habeas corpus into play too. There.
Yeah, that's. I guess I do that after the seizure. Cease and desist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the next step now. They've already defaulted. They don't really worry because they're so used to getting away with, you know, they think somehow probably they'll get out of it. So they're not even really worried. You don't even answer.
Yeah, and they do what they want at the end anyway, and that is a major problem for justice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they told my daughter they're taking the children because they don't like her mother because I challenged their corruption. What kind of law says you can take someone's children and say you don't like their mother? Where's that? look at all that.
The argument that you need to make, well, look, at you could probably put a lot of the cases that Brent is speaking about a little earlier here. And the argument ultimately is jurisdiction. I think that's where you really got to go. And the government has no jurisdiction over a family and their internal problems and situations. It's up to the family to fix the problem, not the government.
I did that. You're right. I did. Listen, I challenged jurisdiction on them so many times. I did it to the face. Guess what? They literally threw me out of the courtroom, and the judge said, Judge Gillespie said, if you don't leave the courtroom, we will have you removed.
Yeah, they do things like that. They're just evil.
Yeah. I've asked them, I said, listen, I've even asked them in writing, okay, produce proof that you have better claim to title to my heirs, my biological property, than I do. They won't answer. I said, otherwise, return them in 72 hours. I did that like probably 6-7 years ago. I said, return them in like, I think I said 24 hours if you can't prove that. They went silent. They wouldn't answer and still kept them. Their attitude is, we'll do what we want to do. We got the sheriffs. We got our gunmen. We got our henchmen. We do what we want to do at the force of the gun.
Yeah.
The sheriffs, we tell them. But when you walk into the courthouse, if you could walk in there, the sheriffs are positioned like snipers, literally.
Well, yeah, they're, you know, they seem to be there. They think they're there to protect the judge, and that's their only job.
Yes.
And that's what it appears.
Yes.
I mean, we've been in some crazy situations where they called emergencies and had all of these cops come and getting ready for some, you know, civil. What was it? Help me out with this, Gerard. What was it? It was calling us sovereign citizens, and we were going to cause some kind of, you know, dangers in the courthouse. It was really strange.
Right. I've had literally the magistrate tell me, you're not allowed to object, okay? Only attorneys are allowed to object. Now, understand how it's like to be told things when you know the truth, when you know so much law, okay? And they tell you that. And then when I said something again,
feels good about
that. Object again.
Huh? They feel protected about that for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm telling you what their perspective is. They feel protected, okay? They're not right, okay?
Yeah.
It's evil, okay? There's no getting away from that. But they're acting under certain perceptions. They're acting under the idea that you have to have a bar, a license to speak.
Yes.
And in a sense, this applies to civil courts. And that's where I'd make the case. That may apply to civil courts. And as long as you open the court of record. But we're in a common law court, and it doesn't apply in a common law court. I have an unalienable right to practice law and do whatever I please. And no judge and no court can stop me from doing that. Now, that would be the argument.
Well, about 7 years ago, and I've learned much better now that she wouldn't be able to do that now, you know.
It's an uphill battle, though. It's an uphill battle.
Even if they know you know law, even in a court of record, if you're in their presence, they still will. They seem to think getting physical is a trump card. They're like the street thugs in black robes and uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Even in a court of record, if you open your mouth and say things they don't like, okay, you know they'll push that button and they like to get physical, you know. And no matter what you tell a sheriff, you're going to say, well, the judge said this. I got to do what the judge said. This and this and that.
Let me tell you what I think you should be doing at the same time you're doing what you're doing in the courts is you should be getting together with people organizing a committee of safety and approaching that sheriff, because at some point you have to deal with that sheriff. That sheriff either has to, produce a spine and a backbone and do something and obey the law, or you need to remove him from power. And that could be done, of course, by the next election on the one hand, But it also, if you have enough, if you have enough people and you organized well enough, you could do it by removing them from office through recall. But you need enough people to really do that. Maybe at least maybe 20, 30 people to make that movement.
I have
the ability to recruit people, and I contacted. You already have a guy from Broward County.
Yep, then you get along with them. Yeah.
I'm trying to get with him to help him, but he just had a baby and he's slowing. He hasn't gotten back to me. I even contacted your girl in Hillsborough County because I have a couple people there. I'm good at recruiting people. Okay, I have a master's degree in leadership and management. I'm leadership material. I'm good at recruiting people into a proper a cause, including lawful. But you have someone already on those committees in Florida, but I offer to help because I'm able to.
If you can make the connection with them and say, well, okay, if you can't push this forward now, you know, let me start working on this and start organizing this until you can get back. So move it along in another way, maybe.
Yeah, family is going to call me back. My name is Mitzi.
Well, you know what you do? Look it, you go on and you can add your name. You can put more than one name as a leadership in the county. Add your name to that county, and then start bringing people together, and notify him by email that this is what you're doing, and if you're able to participate now, you know, come on over. If not, we'll continue until you get ready. You know, we'll go forward. Just go forward.
All right, because I know it very well, and I'm constantly involved with these people because of things they've done. Those, you know, I told you the same people kidnapped me and drugged me. War crime. It's a war crime.
I know Gerard wanted to say something about this. Gerard?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, besides, you know, recalls take time and they're hard and all that.
Yeah.
But most of these sheriffs that are lawless like that, they have things in their back. You're almost better off having somebody investigate them and get them indicted and get them out of there. Because they're always got their fingers in the till or something like that. And that might actually be an easier route. And the other thing is, never forget, the sheriff is a political animal. He depends on the people in his county to get elected. So if you get like a CS group, they get afraid of that. Even you'd be surprised, even 50 or 100 people, because that's a lot of noise in the county. You know, they have these meetings and two people don't show up. So if you get a committee of safety that has 100 or 200 people, he won't know how to act or what.
Oh yeah, that's power right there. You got 100 people or more. That is extreme power.
And it's not as hard to do as you think it is. And believe me,
no, I can do it.
I don't know what's in him, whatever good he has in him, but he'll see things your way pretty quickly. You know. Anyway, just a suggestion.
We only got a couple of minutes. We got other people, so finish up and we'll move on.
You know, I guarantee you won't. Brent won't find a Florida case that's agree. Because they have a fraudulent law. You ask any of them, in that right? That's a child's right state. In that state, the child is always right. That is the fraudulent law there.
Well, then what you got to do is get a hold of your grandchildren and get them up and, you know, make the point they need to go home. Child's always
They have one of them is autistic, and they harp on his fear.
Yeah.
The other one, when they saw I was closing in, the judge wrote a quick adoption. She saw I was closing in. That person has fled
they
town now.
They sent for an adoption with family in presence, huh?
Yeah.
This
is a stranger. She let come in the hospital and kidnap a newborn, and they held my daughter at gunpoint while she still had a bleeding incision and caught infection, and forced her to get out of bed while sedated to go to the courtroom. If that's not cool, what is?
And that's
threatened her not to go back upstairs to try to see the child. They let the stranger get her. The stranger has fled now to Georgia. I have to find her. I may have to get a detective.
I
nullified all that stuff long ago. I know. I killed it.
I hate to shut you off, but we do have to move on. But I do want to just say one thing. You know, once you get your group together, especially if you get 100 people, you got power. You get your charter together and your resolution. Those are the two things. Go through the book that we put together.
Yes.
Get your charter together. Get your resolutions together. Get your seal. make a nice booklet, but have it bound down in Staples or Office Max or whatever, and then make your appointment with the sheriff. Give him a copy. You should only be 5 or 10 minutes. Say, hey, look, we're going to get back with you in 30 days or so after you've read through this and understand what we're doing.
Yeah.
Make sure he's got a copy of the book, Government by Consent.
Because he already knows who I am already. He's a defendant in my case, so he already knows. Yeah.
So make sure he gets that, and then after that, then you talk with him and you see where he goes from there. Then you'll know whether he's salvageable or not.
Yeah, I got together like 30 people in like 2 days on a case that I'm working on.
Well, there you go. Just think about what you could do with 30 people beginning a committee of safety in the first meeting. If you can get 30 people there, that's a potential 60 people for your next meeting, your first real meeting after the introduction meeting. But with that, we got to move on because we're running late.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, gotcha, though.
All right, we'll talk some more, I'm sure.
Okay, all right, gotcha. All right.
Thank you. Gerard, back to you.
Okay, we got Aslu. I got you unmuted. Go ahead. I hear a fan. I don't hear you. Are you there?
No, you didn't get... Let me do it. Let me mute one and then unmute... Oh, no unmute for that, huh? Hit the next question, see what happens.
That brought unmuted the first.
Hit the next question again. Okay, now you hit Felicia, and hopefully the...
Hello, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Felicia, long time no here. How you doing?
Yeah, all right. I have two quick questions. One, with the release of 2000 Mules documentary, do you think that the election will be overturned? And the second question is...
There's no doubt about that.
Say again?
There's no doubt about that. The election is going to be overturned. There's no doubt about it. There's no getting away from it. That's part of the plan. That's part of the Trump plan.
The 2000 Mule was only the first punch. The second punch that's coming, which is going to be the voting, the evidence that they had that the pillow man was on, that all of a sudden you didn't hear anything, that's the second part that's going to come out. And that was actually done by other governments throughout the world cooperating with that. That's why this thing has been so hard to beat, because it has to be done worldwide, because these guys are all together, these Rothschilds and Rockefellers. They've been hacking elections for years, and this is all about taking them all out. So it's very, very difficult, and it's like you have to be careful what you're doing, and that's why there's been so many delays. But I do believe that you're going to see the dominoes start to fall from the information that I've been getting, and John's got some different resources, and he agrees.
Yeah, you look at, you know, this is a well planned out plan. There's no getting away from that. And it had to take 2 years, and it had to be 2 years without Trump in the White House, because then that would be a problem. Because he's out of the picture. They can't point his finger and do a mirror image to him and go through all this stuff, because he's not there no more. And so the people have to suffer. And he prevented them from really getting cover. They don't have any cover. You know, the gas problem, it's theirs. They created this gas problem. All this inflation, it's theirs. All of the damage in this nation is theirs. And the other thing is we had to go 2 years before Trump could go back into office, which he will go back into office, there's no doubt in my mind anyway, as soon as this problem with that election takes place and the true winner is reinstated as president. Now that puts Trump back into the White House for 2 years, and there's legislation. Remember, a president cannot serve any more than 2 terms, but they can serve a part of another president's term, and then 2 terms after that, or however the mix might go on that. They can serve that way, so it has to go through 2 years anyway, so that Trump can come in, finish his 2 years, get everything ready, and then the next 4 years to really, you know, really solidify America. I think the plan is brilliant. And the people had to suffer. They have to see. Remember, we're all casualties of war, okay, every one of us. And we've been injured for, I know I've been injured all my life when I look back to realize all they've stolen from me and everyone else. And we're all casualties of war. But the people have to suffer. They have to see. And the people are suffering, and they are seeing. And that's important. We now have the majority of the people seeing, so it could happen any time. And we're going to win. There's no doubt. There's going to be a landslide of a Republican win for these midterms, and President Trump will be reinstated as he should be, and he'll take his second term, which will be 2.5 or 10 years altogether. And hopefully God will bless him to with ripe old age to continue on, because he is up there.
Okay.
And that's a tough job, let me tell you.
That's all right. When he's done, we'll put his wife in.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. My second question is going on 5 years for my non-judicial foreclosure, and nothing's happening. I actually, a local cop here actually knows my case, and he told me that my case would never see a day in court.
Well, he's right and he's wrong. He's right if things continue and you continue frustrating yourself up with the processes that everybody's been using on that, and even what we've been informing people. I've got some new stuff. I'd like to get it out early. It'll definitely be in a book. And, you know, there's certain motions you need to make in that court, and the court's going to get stuck when you put a motion into the court. That's going to be a major problem. And there's a few other things, strategies, that's going to put them into a pickle. They're really going to have a dilemma, and they're going to not know what to do. And let me tell you, you see, what they're doing is once you reveal that fraud on the court, because what they're doing, it takes time to change the ownership of your property. That's what they're busy doing right now behind the scenes. They're working on that. They're working on fiduciary authority. They're working on changing the ownership of the property. They're working on becoming the landlord, making you the tenant. And then that's when they come in and they have the sheriff come in through another court. Doesn't have to be the same court, or it could be the town court or whatever. But the sheriff can come in and remove you from the home, because the court will view those people as the owner of the property, you as the tenant, and evict you, and you're out of there. And I tell people all the time that go through this process, hang into your house. You're not going to pay a thing for 5, 6, 7, 8 years or whatever it is. As long as you keep going to the court, keeping it going, and prevent that move from happening. Now I know some ideas, I've realized some ideas that we can do and start to really put some injury upon these people, because the judge is not going to know what to do. Remember, the judge needs to remain silent in this thing, because these are non-judicial foreclosures. And even though a lot of states have non-judicial foreclosure rules or laws or whatever it is they want to call it, I don't even know, legislation, let's say, okay, even though they have that, okay, which appears to be on a county level, which is really strange again, but the counties don't have the power to legislate anything. Maybe to some degree they do on county's level. I guess it's a debatable thing. But the bottom line, okay, is that the statutes that they're using and what's going on for non-judicial foreclosure really keeps the court out of the system. But they play it out inside the courtroom. And the judge really never makes any decision. And whatever decisions he makes, it's not recorded. And he definitely is not going to sign off at the end and put a seal on it. It's going to just be an open thing. This is the game they play. It's total fraud. It's fraud on the court. It's these people are committing real fraud, and they need to go to jail for it. They're stealing property.
Okay, well, they already stole mine, and I've been at my house going on 5 years now, and I've even pretty much wrote the judge in the clerk of court telling them that they're responsible.
But you're still in the house, right?
No, I've been out.
You're out now. Okay, how long have you been out?
It'll just be 5 years coming up.
Well, how long did you stay in while they were going through the process?
Until they kicked me out and put landlord and all that stuff you just talked about.
Yeah,
okay, so how long was that going for?
About a year.
Okay, that's kind of strange that it would happen that quick, because you can get 4, 5 or more years. I know people that have sat in that house for 4, 5 and more years and still didn't get kicked out. Because it takes time.
My case is supposedly in that, what you call it, that one, what it's called, I forgot where you filed all the federal paperwork.
Right. Well, if you're in there, then it'll be reheard at some point after devolution.
Not in there,
but even if it's not, look at, even if it's not, you have the records of what was going on yourself. And on the other side of devolution, you have to be compensated for this. You've been injured. You'll be able to pull us back into the court system because all this stuff was unlawful. And there'll be a lot of stuff in the book for this particular problem.
Well, I need to go ahead and do that because 5 years of being sleeping in my car is kind of becoming redundant.
Right.
And I keep filling out all this paperwork and then nothing's happening.
Yeah. Well, again, yeah, you know, look at the School of Hard Knocks is where we've been. And, you know, some of the knowledge that I've just recently come up, you know, putting this book together has forced me to do a little more research here and a little more research there. And in that process of putting this book together, which is probably going to be over 1,000 pages or close to it, and it's going to be a full-size book, 8.5 by 11, because, you know, I have a lot of forms in there, and I wanted to lay out the forms in a nice way so that people can appreciate them, use them, and so on. But in that process, I'll tell you what, I had quite a few epiphanies. Things came together in my mind and said, whoa, you know. And I'll I'm going to articulate that, verbalize that in writing when I in this book as it be and it'll be released soon. So hopefully I'll be out in the next week or two. Again, I don't know how long it's going to take to publish, but I'll be done, I believe, this week without a doubt.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see where you go with that. You know, we could talk some more in a couple of weeks, maybe.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Felicia. And I think things are going to start moving, and timing is everything. And I think you're really going to be on time where we weren't before. It just wasn't.
Every American is going to be compensated. Every single American. That is the only righteous, just thing to do. And when we seize all this property and all this gold and all this money, all this property, and just think about, whoa, but the government's going to take that? No. It's got to go somewhere. Where's it going to go? They've got all these big corporations going to take them away from them because these people are going to be in jail and they're going to auction them off to the people. And where's that money going to go? To the government? No, that would be unjust. It's got to go to the injured party. Who's the injured party? We, the people. We've been injured for all our lives. It's unbelievable the damage that they have done to us and a lot of it which we don't even realize.
Well, Felicia needs a new house and a new car, damn it.
Absolutely, me too.
Okay, we're going to move to Michael because we're over time. Thank you. It was good to hear from you, too, by the way.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Hey, John Gerard, how are you doing tonight?
Good,
hey,
good.
Hey, listen, some responses and then get your quick kickback on a couple of things that were discussed. And the one the way it was explained that fraud upon the court is done by the court.
Done by the officers. That's fraud on the court can only be done by the officers of the court.
That charge
can only be applied in that way.
And then also, John, what you stated over. The importance of not getting your mind just flooded and overwhelmed by the civil law. No common law over civil law. I mean,
that's where we need to spend our time on the real law. The law will set us free.
And another thing, the young lady from Florida, child rights state. My question is. She made that statement about that state, but how many other states is the Child Protective Services rendering, the child before a parent? I mean, there's got to be many more.
It probably is. Yeah, I don't know. I look at they're all evil. They play games. They'll say one. They speak out of both sides of their mouth. You know, it depends on what benefits them. And that's what they apply. They don't even apply their own rules. They don't even apply their own laws. They make it all up as they go. And it's horrible.
They can break their laws because they're not laws to begin with.
Yeah, it's true, too.
And just one last thing, guys. Committees of safety, that's to enforce the law. Pertaining to devolution, devolution was the safeguard through executive orders that Trump ordered to
It started with Kennedy.
To maintain a continuity of government.
Right, but that started with Kennedy.
Okay, well maybe it started.
And it is
there,
the continuity of government. You're absolutely right, but bear in mind, they've taken it to play one game. We've gained control enough to be able to play it and take it to the other side. But,
yeah.
You know, remember, the idea of devolution really comes from an executive order from Kennedy ultimately for these, and that's why he put forward the Green Berets particularly and other special forces, and they have an ongoing command from President Kennedy that goes right down the line to protect this nation when the day comes. And that day has come, and Trump has executed the rest of that and put it into effect. And the military has been in control of what's going on for a long time. Space Force is all part of that process. They've been watching everything. Military has all intelligence from every agency. That's how it flows. The military has to have it all, and they do have it all. And they know what's going on. And these stupid idiots, these morons, okay, that set up all these big buildings out west somewhere, I forget where they are, that all information, every transaction you make, every email you send, every phone call you make, anything you do over the internet funnels through that and is recorded and then sent back out, so it goes through them. So they're watching everything in order to spy on the people. And meanwhile, these idiots don't realize it also was spying on them. So again, more information.
Yeah.
Look what they've done with the emails. They think they're escaping the emails? No, that's recorded in many places.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't getting away with none of that stuff. There is no such thing as a missing email. Doesn't matter what they delete. You can remember, you can't delete anything really. And they got it's all locked up in their building. It's there, and they're done. They're done. Thank God. I mean, look at before Trump, I was just getting ready for war, hard cold war.
Okay. Well, thanks guys for the call. And you guys, Godspeed to both of you.
Godspeed to you too. Thanks.
All right, good night.
Good night. Hey, try hitting that, unless you want me to do it, the next question, and eventually you'll get to Asulu. You want me to do it, Gerard? Did we lose Gerard?
We put Gerard to sleep.
Oh, there he goes. Okay, he tried it. Okay. All right. Try hitting it one more time, Gerard. And it should go to the next caller. The last caller. All right, I'll try it. Let me try it from my end. Maybe it'll work on my board.
Not working.
Oops. It's not working here either. I can't unmute her. I can't unmute her. So. Let me mute Michael and see if I can unmute then. No, you can't get into that.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that.
Oh, there you go. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Thank you, John. Thank you for answering those questions earlier. That was me, the letter that they returned after 8 months.
Right.
And and so
I thought we talked to her. John, you got confused. We got her in the beginning before the other two.
Yes, I appreciate it, but I do have a couple more questions. When is your book coming out, John?
Well, I you know, look at, I keep saying I can finish it in a day or two, but I keep getting pulled away. I just they won't leave me alone. Someone's got to do something.
Okay.
I think I have a good day's worth of work, too, at the most, and I think I can have that done this week. And then it's a matter of how long to get it published. I've been formatting as I go, but I have to do a final format. That could take a day. So mm-hmm. It's 3-4 days of that. And then it's a matter of just uploading it and pushing it forward through having it published. And that, I understand, could be done rather quickly. It depends on where I go and how I go. I'd like to go to Amazon for numerous reasons, but on the other end of things, they don't talk to you. And I'm really upset with those people. I've been trying to talk with them people for weeks. And and there's just no way. They got this, it's like a chess game trying to get through. But I've gotten through a couple of times, but they just won't pass me to the right people. So I don't know. They're set up. It appears to me that whole system is set up in such a way, and unless I don't understand something, it's easy to steal people's intellectual work. And if that is the case, then I'm not going to go through with them through Amazon. I'll go another route. I was talking with Brent earlier, and he gave me some thoughts and ideas, and there is a company he was dealing with. I made a note of it here somewheres, and I'm going to look into that too. Author to Market, AUTHOR, number 2, MARKET, Author to Market at .com. So I'm going to look into those people and see once how I would market my book if I you go through them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Well, keep that in prayer then. And another question, my husband wants to find out how can he get to be, considered as attorney general. So, for the area where, the state where we at.
Yeah, well, Attorney General, I think you got to run for office, and you have to have a background, of course. They're probably not going to let you. I don't know what kind of background does he have. Attorney General has to know the law and has to know equity as well as law. Equity is what's called positive law. It's very interesting they use that word positive law for equity, which it is. It should be positive law. So maybe it is interesting, and maybe it should have been done that way. But it's man-made law. It's legislative law. That's what equity is, okay? Law is common law. In law, at law, law. It's all the same, common law. There is only one law, and that is common law. On the federal level, there are 57 USC codes, so there are 57 different jurisdictions in equity, okay? There is... that's in federal level. If you go into Black's Law, there are 51 different jurisdictions that are discussed in Black's Law. One of them is law, which is in law, at law, common law. Same thing. All of those phrases are all the same thing. Natural law, common law, in law, at law, law. All means the same thing, common law. And then there are 50 other jurisdictions. There's the exchequer, I think they call one, and there's all kinds of different things. And then there's equity in general, that is discussed in Black's Law and so on and so forth. So people have to be careful how they read that. A lot of these sovereign citizens, and I was guilty of this too for a while, of course, the ignorance, to how things really work, and you think, so here's the problem, here's the solution. But then you find something and you start to, realize that you got something wrong here. One of the things, they think that you have to get rid of, as a general rule, you have to get rid of all equity. And they lump it all together. That's not true. No, we need equity. And remember, equity is common law, too. It's just legislative law given by the approval of the people under a constitution, which is under common law, so it's a common law process. We have what's called American jurisprudence, okay, which brings us back into common law. So equity must also be, related to maxims, truths. It's all really working at the same thing. But remember, they're writing rules, they're writing codes, they're writing regulations. Why are they writing these things? To control the monster. What's the monster? The monster is commercial activities that can very quickly get out of way. I can look at, there's so many companies you could think of. Skype is a problem. Amazon is a problem. They're all out of control. They need more regulations, or at least they need the right regulations. And so you got to control the monster, and government is a monster. It's a fire. It's danger. And it's got to be controlled. So a lot of these, most of these laws are written to control the agencies. The FBI is controlled by equity. There's a particular code that focuses and controls them. The post office have regulations they have to abide by and operate underneath. The president operates under certain laws also. I think it's USC 3, if I remember. And that deals with the president. And there are thousands of pages in equity that controls the president and empowers the president. And it's written by our legislators, and it empowers the president with a lot of things. And that's why a president needs lawyers to really know those laws, 1,000 pages, to be able to say, hey, you could do something about that, president. Yeah, he needs those advisors. He needs those lawyers. So all of this is important. And a lot of people that are stuck in this civil, in this sovereign citizen movement, they don't understand that part. And I was void of that part, too, some years back. Mm-hmm. But I come to realize that, you know, and look at, judges aren't permitted to make summary judgments, but they do make judgments in court. For instance, you make motions, and the judge makes the decision on the motion. And motions, look at, motions should be easy from a perspective of a judge to make the right decision. It shouldn't be a hard thing, and it should be easy to be seen that it's done right. For instance, and it could be easy to see when it's done wrong. So you have to appeal a decision that's unjustly made by a judge. You know, how a court case works, ultimately, is it's an argument, okay, and it's done on paper. And that argument goes back and forth through motions, a move to strike something, a motion for this and a motion for that. There's discovery. But you bring all your witnesses and your memorandums of law, you make your case in there. So then when you go to court, now the court case starts after the pleadings are done, okay? Once you move towards the court case itself and the jury is in play and you're ready to do your case and you come up with opening statements and you're ready to go forward, you cannot bring anything into the court that hasn't already been put on paper. And that's how you preparing your case there. Now you're arguing your case before the jury, and the jury's going to make the decision. But in the process of getting there, someone has to orchestrate which is the magistrate or the magistrate judge, and remember, a judge is a magistrate, but he's in his magistrate cap in a court of law. He can't make a summary judgment inside a court of law, but he can make decisions. You see, I didn't understand that for a while either. I thought the judge couldn't make any decisions, ultimately. He'd bring before the jury. But how do you get to the jury? You have to have your argument and everything on paper. Everybody's got to get free understanding of what the other side has. And the only thing that can add into that is something comes new that you didn't know beforehand. It could be brought in if it's vital to the case. But if you knew about it and you didn't bring it in, it's too late. You can't bring it in. Okay, mm-hmm. And a court case could be hurt by that because of incompetency by a lawyer or whatever. Sometimes, of course, it could be accidentally unforeseen, I guess, but, you know. Okay. But anyway.
So to sum up all the, in order to become a attorney general, you have to know the Constitution.
If you become an attorney general, you would really need to understand the law of that state, whether it's federal or one of the states. You'd have to be an educated individual because you're involved with it all. That would be my thinking anyway. I don't know if Brent is still here and he wants to pipe in a thought on that, but that's what I see. You need to be qualified really seriously.
Right. Okay. One more thing. You mentioned your IRS memorandum.
Yeah.
Earlier, how do I get a hold of that?
Well, I will release some of that stuff, even without outside my book, so people can have it. But I haven't put it together in my best one of the pages that I have to finish off. It's already written. I just got to go to my computer, find it, and put it in, and I'll go through it to perfect it, maybe make a few changes. But I have a powerful paper. They don't want in the court. Believe me, they do not want this paper in the court. You put this paper in the court. And those attorneys, particularly the U.S. attorneys, they're going to make a move for striking that paper. They don't want that paper in there. But, you know, again, you have to – a lot of strategy is involved, a lot of thinking this out. You know, you don't let them strike something that's unlawful there for them to strike, because this is the law of the land we're talking about. And we're talking about legislation that is in fact, that's in place, and the relationship between the two. You know, you got to win the battle in that argument to keep that memorandum in that court case. Because let me tell you something, in a court of law, when it comes down to it and you get before that jury and you take that memorandum and you lay that position out, they can't defeat that position. You'll see, once you read this paper and you follow along, you'll see they cannot defeat this paper. It's an impossibility to defeat it. It can't happen. And the other thing is you know, they'll put statutes above, and they teach lawyers to do this, statutes above Constitution. They don't want you to come into the court and given your authority at the Constitution, different parts of the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights. They don't want you coming in making those positions. They want you coming in making positions using statutes. It keeps it statutory. It keeps it towards the civil law. And once they you come in with that, they'll try to override it, which is against the law of the land, and which every judge must obey. You know, and again, you can win the argument, and you can run it up the line to the appeal process. You remember, in the middle of a case, you can appeal. You can appeal the decision. You can also write a writ of error, which is more powerful, and that's where I would start off. I'd write a writ of error, okay? And if the judge still doesn't comply to the that which is just, that's when you appeal it up to his boss, and then you appeal it up to their boss, and so on. You get to the United States Supreme Court. But, you know, again, the evil runs up line, so as well as it runs down line. So that could be still a part of a challenge on this side of devolution. But guaranteed, on the other side of devolution, we will be able to get justice.
Right. Well, we keep you guys in prayers, and we appreciate. Thank you for all that you've done and all the brothers and sisters that are involved. God bless you, and we thank you.
Right, thank you. And remember, everybody, we need leadership, so we need leaders. We need district leaders, anybody that wants to work with the district leaders. We have 10 of them right now. We need about 20 or more to run the whole United States. And just send a mail to mail, M-A-I-L, at National Liberty. No, no. Send it to Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Tell them you'd like to be in the leadership, and you'll send out an email when we'll have our meetings, and you come and participate.
Oh, that's what the committee. Well, that's what the.
This is for National Liberty Alliance. We need national leaders, which we call district leaders. It's the Committee of Correspondence for National Liberty Alliance to work with the Committees of Correspondence with all of the other committees of safety throughout the United States as they develop.
Okay.
So we need as much as many people as we can. Many hands make light work. We need help. Help to save this nation.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Good night.
Good night. Are we done, Gerard? I think we are. Okay. All right. Godspeed, everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. You want to shut down, Gerard, or shall I? Okay, I'll shut down. Let me stop the record.